are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
The time is now 6 o'clock. Welcome to WORT's local news for Monday, March 3rd, 2025. I'm your host, Rachel Fields.
And I'm your host, Sam Swartz. In tonight's news,
a bill in the state legislature would force Dane and Milwaukee counties to comply with immigration officials or pay a hefty price.
A newcomer is set for the city council after the incumbent alder suspended her re-election campaign.
And in the second half, we'll share the local government's calendar for the week ahead, celebrate the birthday of a popular children's book author, taste test a shot, and review a documentary streaming on Netflix.
All these and more on tonight's news, but first we'll go live to the BBC for some news from around the world.
BBC News, hello, I'm Eileen McHugh. President Trump has said tariffs on imports from Mexico and Canada will come into effect on Tuesday as planned, but he added that both countries could avoid them.
Tariffs 25% on Canada and 25% on Mexico, and that'll start. So what they have to do is build their car plants, frankly, and other things in the United States, in which case they have no tariffs.
Mr. Trump also said he'd signed an order to increase tariffs on China from 10 to 20%. His comments were followed by sharp falls on US stock markets. In Ottawa, the Canadian Foreign Minister, Melanie Joly, said the looming tariffs represented an existential threat, but Canada would counter them.
Let's be clear. If Trump is imposing tariffs, we're ready. We are ready with $155 billion worth of tariffs, and we're ready with the first tranche of tariffs, which is $30 billion, which is already known.
Donald Trump has said President Zelensky must be more appreciative, but he denied reports he was considering ending military support for Ukraine. Mr. Trump was speaking in Washington 3 days after the furious row in the White House, in which Mr. Zelensky was accused of not being thankful for U.S. help. The Ukrainian president has since repeatedly thanked the U.S., and in his daily video on Monday night, he repeated his wish for an early peace.
Today we continued our work with European partners on a special diplomatic and security architecture, an architecture that can bring peace closer. Ukraine, all of Europe and America together, we can ensure decades of stability. To achieve this, we must be constructive, work together, complement each other's proposals, and accelerate diplomacy to end the war.
The Vatican says Pope Francis suffered 2 episodes of acute respiratory failure on his 18th day in a Rome hospital, where he's being treated for pneumonia. The Pope has been put back on mechanical ventilation. Sarah Rainsford reports.
Sources here at the Vatican say this is all linked to the pneumonia that the Pope is still battling, which takes time. But this is now the 3rd serious downturn since he was admitted to hospital in mid-February. An elderly man who was already missing part of one lung after a previous illness. Vatican sources stress, as they have all along, that the Pope's condition remains complex, his doctors remain cautious, and he is not out of danger.
German police say they don't think there was a political or religious motive behind a car ramming attack that killed 2 people in the city of Mannheim. The suspect is a 40-year-old German man who appears to be mentally ill. He's being treated for a self-inflicted gunshot wound. World News from the BBC. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has threatened Hamas with what he called unimaginable consequences if it doesn't release all Israeli hostages still in Gaza. The Palestinian group has accused Israel of trying to sabotage the ceasefire in the territory. Israel has already suspended all aid after Hamas rejected a plan to extend the first phase of the truce. The UN has accused M23 rebels of abducting at least 130 people from hospitals in Goma in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The UN said the Rwandan-backed rebels who captured the city claimed the patients were members of the DRC's army or pro-government militias. The US First Lady, Melania Trump, has given her support to a bill making revenge porn a federal crime and force tech companies to remove such items from their platforms quickly. The Take It Down bill also seeks to punish people who threaten to publish such images. Here's Gary O'Donoghue.
Online safety is a long-standing interest for the First Lady, and she went to Capitol Hill with a simple message. The legislation would help to safeguard America's youth. The bill before Congress will also require social media companies to take down any such intimate imagery within 48 hours. It's already passed the Senate with bipartisan support and now needs to go through the House before landing on the president's desk for signing. The measure would also cover so-called deep fakes, AI-generated explicit images which have been created featuring real individuals.
Scientists studying the world's most powerful ocean current, which circles Antarctica, have warned it could slow down as melting ice sheets dilute it with fresh water. The Antarctic circumpolar current transfers vast amounts of cold seawater into the Atlantic, Indian and Pacific Oceans. They say the slowdown could lead to more severe climate instability. BBC News.
This is Rachel Fields and Sam Swartz with your local news, coming to you live from the WORT studios in beautiful downtown Madison. Here are tonight's headlines.
Well, the results are in. An audit released by the Wisconsin Election Commissions last week found that the tabulating machines used to count votes in the state had not made a single error in the November election, reports the Associated Press. The random audit examined around 10% of the total votes in Wisconsin. It also looked at hand-counted ballots and found that only 5 human errors, or an error rate of, get this, 0.0000009%. In a social media post, the chair of the Elections Commission said she hopes the audit results assure people on both sides of the aisle that the voting machines are accurate and secure.
The Madison City Clerk's Office implemented new safeguards for absentee ballots in the February primary, reports Isthmus newspaper. The new safeguards come as the clerk's office faces increased scrutiny following the error that led to nearly 200 uncounted ballots in the November election. The new measure logs all delivered absentee ballot carrier envelopes and requires election officials to mark the time they have received the envelope. The lost ballots in November were due to misplaced carrier envelopes that were left unopened. The Wisconsin Elections Commission will hear a summary of the investigation into the lost ballots later this week and will likely provide new guidance for how election clerks should process absentee ballots.
Well, Wisconsin public health experts are wary after the Food and Drug Administration sent out a notification canceling a vital committee meeting that was scheduled for later this month. The FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee usually meets to coordinate the development of the yearly influenza vaccine, which has been routinely modified to maximize its effectiveness. The committee's recommendations are non-binding, but the meetings are open to the public and an important piece of vaccine outreach. Wisconsin had a difficult flu season this year with an unusually high number of hospitalizations. A new flu shot takes around 6 months to develop, and public health experts say that the abrupt cancellation of this month's meeting could set back the entire process. And that's according to the Wisconsin Public Radio.
The state of Wisconsin is unusually stingy with the compensation it offers to people who have been wrongfully convicted of a crime, reports the Wisconsin Examiner. Those wrongfully convicted in Wisconsin can get a maximum of $5,000 for each year of incarceration, and that's capped at $25,000 total. To compare, the federal government offers up to $50,000 per year of wrongful incarceration. Wisconsin also doesn't pay out for many wrongful convictions. The state's claims board favors people who offer quote-unquote clear and convincing evidence of their innocence, as opposed to people who have their convictions overturned on procedural grounds like ineffective counsel. Among the 19 states that pay compensation to the wrongfully convicted, Wisconsin pays nearly the least per year incarcerated. The average payout among the states is more than $68,000 per year.
Well, you may have heard of this. Former Madison Mayor Paul Soglin wrote in a Facebook post last week criticizing current Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway for basing her committee assignments on politics, reports Wisconsin State Journal. The post accused Mayor Rhodes Conway of purposely removing political advisory committees in the Common Council from important committees. But the post received immediate backlash due to Soglin's use of the phrase plantation politics to describe the mayor's actions. Alder Sabrina Madison wrote in an opinion piece for Madison 365 criticizing Soglin's post, saying that Soglin was treating black city politicians who disagreed with him as puppets. Soglin has repeatedly been critical of Rhodes Conway during her tenure as mayor, including criticizing changes to the transit system and the mayor's drive to rezone parts of the city to increase housing density.
And those were your local news headlines. We turn now to two special guests joining us this evening. Andy Height and Helena White are in the studio, and they want to tell you a little something about WORT and our pledge drive.
Hey, hey, this is Andy.
And this is Helena.
And we would like you to call 608-256-2001 or donate online at WRTFM.org because community radio rocks and the local news is such an important connectivity device to the reality of what's going on around our town.
It is actually really, really remarkable. We have an hour every weekday except for Friday. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you get an hour of local news. We have headlines like we just had, and then we have breaking news, and then we have features.
Incredible features.
Interviews, long, like 10-minute long interviews with people. We're really able to get in-depth because we have that amount of time. And the people who are working on this, the journalists working on this, are volunteers.
And they're doing amazing work, whether it's Harry Richardson doing a labor history report or a movie review or Bert Zipper doing the milkweed moments with Pete Harden talking about cutting issues in the egg industry. Or tonight's feature, we have Brenda Conklin, usually Rebecca Kemble, but I think we have Christina Lohr tonight, who are speaking about what's on the docket in local politics.
Local government meetings.
Those of us gives us a chance to influence the inexorable facilitation of the upward distribution of wealth and growth of our police forces.
And we know how much you appreciate the local news here on WRT, so that's why we'd like you to give us a call at 608-256-2001 or
Absolutely.
Go to WORTFM.org. We do have a bunch of thank you gifts. We got a lovely long sleeve t-shirt. It's a new
it's
one
cool.
for this pledge drive.
It's a new one, but it's retro because it was designed in like 82.
It's an old poster and it's got this very abstract little
it looks
red
modern
figures.
Even today.
Little red figures, and they dissolve into musical notes floating in the
really?
Air.
Really? I thought it was representing the collapse of class structures and the death of billionaires.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got it all wrong.
Maybe I did.
So donate to be able to get that. It's fantastic. And that's at, like, the $120 level?
I think so. Or $10 a month as a
As an evergreen donor. And you might want to consider doing that. But
it's a great way to go. It's pain-free. If you know, it's a lot. To come up with 120 in one city.
In one go.
But $10 a month.
Yeah.
And that's really budgetary assurity when when our staff, our volunteer board of directors tries to put together our annual budget to make things work. And our cast of literally hundreds of amazing volunteers come together. And if I come in and accidentally break another set of headphones, not only physical harm, but we'll figure out how to replace them.
Exactly. So 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org. And that, I want to say that number again, 608-256-2001. We have Tom and Ken standing by ready to take your call.
Thank you, Tom and Ken.
We have a big goal of $450.
That's a lot of money
we need to
raise. Let's go for it. If we can get,
a
pledge every 5 minutes, we can knock this thing behind us and we'll be high-fiving and ringing bells.
But
and,
not yet.
Oh,
we haven't heard from anyone yet.
Helena may even sing. If we get it, we'll sing. It'd be better if I didn't sing.
So do pledge and stop Andy from singing. 608-256-2001. Back to the local news.
Yahoo.
Thanks, guys. And now back to the news.
All right, Andy, easy on those headphones. A bill in the state legislature would force Dane and Milwaukee counties to comply with Immigration and Customs Enforcement or pay a hefty price. WORT reporter Shayna Clark has more.
The bill would require sheriffs to comply with detainers and administrative warrants issued by Homeland Security. It would also require sheriffs to request documentation. That means anyone being held in a county jail on a felony charge would have to provide documents like a passport, birth certificate or naturalization certificate. And it requires certain reporting requirements to the legislature and State Department of Justice. Assembly Bill 24 was introduced earlier this month. More than 36 Republicans have signed on, saying it would ensure public safety. No Democrats have signed on to the bill, which is expressly targeted at the sheriffs of Dane and Milwaukee counties. So says Assembly Leader Robin Voss, who said during a public hearing last week that he believes in local control. But
I think anybody who is close to Milwaukee would say, wow, people are going to quickly realize that there are no consequences for having things happen. That means those of us who go into Milwaukee, who go into Dane County, are also going to be at risk if we work there, if we go to a restaurant, if we, you know, take our kids to school, whatever it would be. Well, that's unacceptable for me. So it is a rare thing that I would support this kind of mandate, but they've really given us no choice.
The bill also proposes a steep penalty for Dane and Milwaukee counties if their sheriffs don't comply, a 15% reduction in shared revenue, the money sent back from the state to local governments. In Dane County, that translates to hundreds of thousands of dollars. Two organizations representing sheriffs and deputy sheriffs across Wisconsin endorsed the bill, but they still listed concerns in a public statement, saying that immigration enforcement is fundamentally a federal issue and raising concerns of an unfunded mandate. 8 organizations had registered against the bill as of last Friday. Among them, Voces de la Frontera Action, United Migrant Opportunity Services, and the ACLU of Wisconsin, where Amanda Merkway is advocacy director. She says the bill would force law enforcement into becoming tools of mass deportation.
Right now, we're seeing some very aggressive rhetoric and policies being changed at the federal level. And a bill like this could have really sweeping impacts for immigrant communities, but also, you know, all residents of Wisconsin.
A 2024 report from ICE lists Dane and Milwaukee counties among hundreds of, quote, non-cooperative institutions throughout the country. Still, of Wisconsin's 72 counties, just 7 have formal cooperation agreements under a program called 287G, says Merkway.
There was a 2022 ACLU report kind of highlighting how existing voluntary ICE sheriff cooperation programs, particularly the 287G program, have a long history as a vehicle for racism and targeting of immigrant communities, despite, you know, being advertised as, you know, needed for public safety. They can actually have the opposite effect and keep communities less safe.
She adds that what's lost in the debate is the terror this sends to communities.
It's just terrifying, kind of how, what a slippery slope, just small statutory changes that could, you know, have an enormous impact on the safety of immigrants and non-immigrants alike.
The bill still has yet to receive a full vote in the state assembly, and a sister bill in the state senate is waiting in committee. Governor Evers says he'll veto the bill. Reporting for WORT News, I'm Shayna Clark.
Ryan Coughlin, a small business owner and board president of the Sassy Neighborhood Association, is running for city council this spring. Current alder Dina Nina Martinez Rutherford, who's represented the district northeast of Lake Monona since 2023, suspended her reelection campaign in January and backed Coughlin on social media. Now essentially guaranteed a spot on the city council, Coughlin sat down with WORT News producer Faye Parks to introduce himself to the constituents of District 15.
Hi, I'm Ryan Coughlin. I'm a longtime Eastside resident. I am a small business owner. I own Dirty Paws Hiking and Boarding, which is an outdoor doggy daycare. I've been doing that for about 5 years. I've been involved in the Neighborhood Association for over a decade. Working with the Neighborhood Association, I've had to communicate and work with the city and city staff and previous alders. So I have a lot of experience doing that already. So I think that when I become an alder, I kind of have a little bit of a leg up because of that experience. And I'm really excited to continue to meet all the neighbors in District 15 and in April be the District 15 alder.
What led you to run for city council this year?
In my house, it's kind of been a running joke between my wife and I that, you know, someday I'm going to run for alder. And every time that we've actually had a conversation about me actually doing that, the timing just has not been right. You know, I've been busy with work or other careers, building a business. And so this time around, when I saw an opportunity to run for alder and transition from the neighborhood association side to the city side, it just made a lot of sense for me right now. Owning my own business gives me some flexibility in my schedule in order to accomplish and get to all the things that an alder needs to do. There's a lot of meetings that take place at different times throughout the day. Like I said, being a small business owner is kind of an advantage because I can free up some time for myself in order to meet with constituents or work on big issues when they do arise in District 15 or at the city level.
What is one specific achievement that you want to drive forward in the council?
Day one for me is making sure that I have really good communication with District 15 constituents. District 15 is really, really active in a lot of different things, whether or not it's development, bike paths, new construction, parks. And so one of the things that needs to happen is I have to do a really good job communicating the issues that are happening at the city level with those constituents. So day one, I want to make sure that I have all the resources I need for my blog and also take a proactive look at what's coming up in the district and at the city level so that I can make sure that I'm communicating with, you know, staff and also with the constituents. Another thing that I want to do day one, but also I'm starting to do a lot of it now, is connect with other alders and city staff. I met with the mayor, so I'm really trying to get a head start on a lot of things so that when I am elected April 1st, I will be able to kind of hit the ground running and not spend as much time onboarding. So I'm really trying to be proactive in that.
Housing is perhaps the most complex and sprawling issue the city faces. It impacts everyone, from families trying to find an affordable home to college students trying to find affordable off-campus housing. A recent city report found that the income needed to pay Madison's median monthly rent without becoming housing cost burdened correlates to a full-time job, paying about $28 per hour or $58,000 a year. This issue is so complicated, it's hard to know where to start. What do you believe is an achievable jumping-off point to address Madison's affordable housing crisis?
For me in District 15, one of the first things that we're going to be working on is the Southeast Area Plan. The city does these plans throughout the city, and what it does is it really looks at land use and zoning. And what that allows us to do is find really good sites for development and affordable housing. What we can do is we can work with the communities in which we're hoping to have things built and make sure that everybody's on the same page. One of the things I see a lot of in District 15, but more specifically in Safi, is that there's a lot of pressure for us to have more density. And so what I think needs to happen is by looking at all the different sites that we have available for development, we can really take a proactive approach and, you know, make sure that things are zoned the best for the use. And then we can also make sure that our development is popping up on transit lines. I think it's really important from affordability factor that we build on transit-oriented sites because it really allows residents to move throughout the city. And if you don't have a vehicle, for example, if we just build all sorts of housing on those transit lines, it just, again, it just allows everybody to get to their jobs, get around the city, and people have less limitations if we're being really smart about where we're building development.
Madison voters faced an unusual choice in November and ultimately decided to say yes to a city funding referendum on the ballot that raised property taxes. Still, city finance leaders say the city's structural budget deficit is a chronic issue worsening over time. What is one way you would lead the city to address the budget deficit outside of raising property taxes again?
One of the things that I think the city can do to help alleviate some of our budget concerns is making sure that our tax dollars are going in the most efficient places. I'm not a supporter of, you know, reducing staff and cutting wages or things like that for city workers. They really make our city go. You know, if you drive around the city like I do, you see how much our city workers are doing. And so when that referendum came up, it wasn't a choice between, you know, cutting programs and, you know, things like that. I think it was, how do we make sure that we can support the services that we have currently? And then moving forward, we're going to have to find other ways. One of the things that I've heard most from neighbors, tying it a little bit back to affordability, is, you know, I'll knock on two doors that are side by side, and one person really wants affordable property taxes so that they can stay in their home, and the person next to them really wants affordable rent so they can stay in their apartment and whatnot. So I think it is really important that we are looking at all of the different ways that we spend tax dollars and find ways that we can save a little bit of money so that we don't ever have to look at raising property taxes again. I am a homeowner, and I have seen my property taxes go up every year for the past 12 years, and it is concerning. And so that's also one of the reasons why I also decided to run for office, is so that I can ask questions and be proactive in figuring out ways to alleviate some budget issues that we might have over the next 2 years while I'm in office.
District 15's current alder, Dina Nina Martinez Rutherford, suspended her re-election campaign last month. That means you're more or less guaranteed to take her place on the council this spring. Do you have a last message to the voters of District 15 before they head to the polls next month?
You know, the campaign's not over for me. I'm not just sitting around just because, like you said, I'm technically going to win. I'm still knocking on doors. I'm still meeting neighbors. I'm still going to neighborhood association meetings, events, and continuing a campaign as I would have with Dina in the race. Because for me, it's really, really important that I earn the trust of the constituents and that they feel like I can be an alder that speaks for them and it advocates for them at the city level.
Ryan Coughlin will be on the April 1st ballot. Current alder Dina Nina Martinez Rutherford suspended her re-election campaign last month and endorsed Coughlin on social media. You can learn more about Ryan Coughlin on his website, ryanfordistrict15.com. That's Ryan for the number 4, district15.com.
The time right now is 6:26 p.m., and you're listening to the live local news on WORT. We now turn to two very special guests in the studio. They're special for a few reasons, just because of who they are and also because their last names rhyme. Andy Height and Helena White would love to tell you a little something about the WORT Winter Pledge Drive.
Oh, thank you, Sam. It's so great to hear your voice over the radio. Sam was new at WORT when I was doing the Monday night news, and I stepped away, and he is still doing it. He was in high school when he started doing the news, and he's in college now. And do you know what his major is? Journalism.
Oh, awesome.
Isn't that amazing? And that's what WORT did. WORT took a young man like Sam, trained him, encouraged him, gave him experience, gave him training, gave him a chance to try things out, and then he decided that he wants to become a journalist.
There's a long, glorious history of journalists making their mark across this country and this world who started here at WRT, the Chip Mitchells.
That is so true.
John, who works at Democracy Now.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm blanking
fantastic.
On your last name, John. Yeah. I'm sorry. So we got White and Height here.
White and Height.
And 608-256-2001. We don't have a lot of time for this pledge break.
No.
We need calls to support this great
local news
produced program that's happening right now on local news.
We know how much you love the news and music programming.
Wait. Nobody loves the news that we're hearing right now.
We
respect and honor and show deep gratitude
true.
For those that are toiling to tell the truth.
Indeed.
But to love the stuff that's happening is hard.
Right. No, it's hard
fear,
to listen.
God,
it's hard to listen. And then I understand it's hard to listen. You know, it's hard to listen to Amy Goodman. It's great to listen to local news and find out what's happening locally. And if you feel like, I just don't know what to do with this world, it's such a mess, what can I do to help? Give us a call at 608-256-2001. Make a donation. We don't mind how small or how large.
We need your help.
Or go to WORTFM.org, and that will be a way that you can truly, truly make a difference in this world by supporting independent media and local news and local programming, local radio, and volunteer-supported community radio.
You got that right.
608-256-2001.
We've got a lot more stories for you coming up in the second half of the show. Stay with us. We'll share the local government's calendar for the week ahead. We'll celebrate the birthday of a popular children's book author. We will taste test a shot, and we will review a new documentary streaming on Netflix.
But now we'll take a quick break, then check in on some world headlines. We'll be right back.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and ResTech Services, serving area businesses, nonprofits, and multi-dwelling properties with high-speed, net-neutral internet, digital phone, and television services. On the web at restechservices.net or by phone at 608-663-3868.
Hi, I'm Randy, a longtime WART listener and an Evergreen donor. This year, I will be donating to WORT through my IRA. To lessen my tax impact, I can make a donation to WART, and this might even lower my Medicare premiums and put me in a lower tax bracket. If you are 70 and a half or older, you can do this too. Why did I decide to include WORT for part of my RMD distributions? Well, it's easy. It's the music. WORT has opened my ears to music I don't hear anywhere else. Donating to WART is my way of saying thanks to this local treasure. To learn more about RMD donations, visit the donation page on WORTFM.org or email Susan at WORTFM.org. Happy 50th, WART.
BBC News with Eileen McHugh. President Trump has said 25% tariffs on imports from Mexico and Canada will come into effect on Tuesday as planned. He also said he'd signed an order to increase tariffs on China from 10 to 20%. Mr. Trump's comments were followed by sharp falls on US stock markets. On Ukraine, Mr. Trump has renewed his public criticism of Volodymyr Zelensky, saying he should be more appreciative of US support. He wouldn't be drawn on reports that he is considering ending US military aid to Ukraine. The Vatican says Pope Francis has suffered two episodes of acute respiratory failure on his 18th day in hospital in Rome. He's back on a mechanical ventilator and an oxygen mask. The leader of the rebels, who've seized large areas of the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, has threatened to march on the capital if government forces attack them. But the M23 leader wouldn't comment on allegations of abuses against civilians by his troops. German police say they don't think there was a political or religious motive behind a car ramming attack that killed two people in the city of Mannheim. The detained suspect is a 40-year-old German man who appears to be mentally ill. The Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has threatened Hamas with what he called unimaginable consequences if it doesn't release all Israeli hostages still held in Gaza. The US Defense Secretary has restored the name of a major army base from Fort Moore to Fort Benning, the name it held until 2 years ago. Pete Hegseth's decision sidesteps a congressional provision prohibiting military bases from being named after soldiers who fought for the Confederacy during the US Civil War. And scientists studying the world's most powerful ocean current, which circles Antarctica, have warned it could slow down as melting ice sheets dilute it with fresh water. BBC News.
The time is now 6:32, and you're listening to the local news on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. I'm your host, Rachel Fields, and I'm here with my co-host, Sam Swartz. Thanks for joining us.
Well, we know it's Monday night, but do you know where your government is and what it's doing? Forward Lookout host Brenda Conkle and producer Christina Liffring have a rundown of this week ahead, including county board meetings, some TID amendments, and a big day for urban planning and transit.
Welcome to Forward Lookout for the week of March 3rd, 2025. I'm Christina Leffring, and I'm here with Brenda Conkle of ForwardLookout.com. Hi, Brenda.
Good evening, Christina.
Well, let's start with Dane County. For Thursday, March 6th at 5:30 p.m., we have the Executive Committee.
They have a couple of things that the board will be voting on later that day. They are going to be looking at the county board rules regarding budget. They're going to make sure that people cannot speak for 5 minutes. They can only speak for three. And it looks like they may be allowing a reduction in the number of budget hearings they have at each committee, changing it from two to one. They also will be doing the county executive appointments, weighing in on a resolution about common sense gun reform, and then appointing Lacey Fox as the Dane County legislative lobbyist.
At 7 p.m., the county board is meeting.
Yep, they have a full agenda. You may want to take a look at some of the items on there. Some things that might be of interest is they are amending the Dane County Court of Ordinances for some changes to the Town of Mazamini Comprehensive Plan. They're also looking at changing some of the rules that they have about tax-deeded land. They will be approving the 87th Amendment to the jail consolidation project. The town of Dunkirk is also going to be changing their ordinance. They're doing a blanket rezone for some of the areas there. Frank Productions is getting a lease with the Lion Energy Center for concerts that they will have. And then that Common Sense Gun Reform resolution will be there, as well as the item about amending the county board rules for the budget. And then there's some toys for the Sheriff's Department.
All right, moving on to the city. Today, Monday, March 3rd, at 4:30 p.m., the Finance Committee met.
Yep, they had also a full agenda. Again, you may want to take a look, but some of the items you may be interested in, they are amending four different TID districts. So Capital Gateway, they're putting in $1 million for B. Stevens Field. You may want to go ahead and look at some of those changes if they impact your area, but there's several of them there. And then they also are looking at the five-year plan. It's a consolidated plan and the one-year action plan for affordable housing, and then also approving the analysis of impediments to fair housing choice. So if you're interested in affordable housing, this is sort of the nitty-gritty of where some of the stuff gets decided. And then at the end of the meeting, they will be getting an update on federal executive orders and directives to pause federal grants and loans.
At 5:30 p.m., the Plan Commission met.
Yep. They also have a full agenda. They are looking at the Lamp House, which is what one of the Frank Lloyd Wright houses in the downtown area. They're looking at approving more height around that building, a little bit controversial for those in the neighborhood, so you may be interested in that. They also will be looking at their floodplain ordinances, as well as they have projects at 321 Russell Street, 3915 Lean Road, 623 North Lake Street, 1240 Sherman Avenue, 77 Sirloin Strip, 900 block of Fair Oaks Avenue, the 3000 block of East Washington, as well as Portage Road project and one on Burke Road.
All right, and then on to Tuesday, March 4th. At 4 p.m., the Room Tax Commission is meeting.
Yeah, they only meet about four times a year, so this is important. They look at how much money they collected in 2024. Looks like it was a little more than they anticipated, and so then they look at the forecast for 2025 and adjust that, and then they look at how they're going to spend the unspent funds from 2024, which looks like that will be put into arts grants.
For Wednesday, March 5th, at 4:30 p.m., Urban Design Commission is meeting.
They had a very short agenda. They only have three projects, one at 849 East Washington. Oh, they're all on East Washington, too. The 800 block, the 3000 block, and the 500 block of East Washington.
At 5 p.m., the Transportation Committee is meeting.
They'll be looking at grants for traffic signal controllers and LED traffic projects. And then they will also be looking at the Complete Streets Guide, as well as the West Washington Avenue and Southwest Commuter Path, looking at how that is designed there. And then they will be looking at the Transportation Improvement Program, which is the program that sort of charts out what transportation projects will be done in the next 5 years.
And 6:30 p.m., the Greater Madison Metropolitan Planning Organization Policy Board, and they're meeting in Sun Prairie.
They are. And they are going to be talking about that transportation improvement plan that the Transportation Committee is also looking at. There is a public hearing. There's several projects about I-39, 90-94, as well as U.S. Highway 51, and then the North-South BRT. So if you have any comments about those, now is the time, because this is sort of the main guiding document that's going to help determine what those projects look like. They're also going to be doing an amendment to the MPO, which is the Metropolitan Planning Organization. Some of those same projects will be amended there. And then they have a couple resolutions about their policies and how they score various projects, as well as project management and recipient coordination plan.
Big day for urban planning transit people.
Exactly.
All right, Thursday, March 6th at 5:30 p.m., Community Development Block Grant Committee.
They also will be looking at adopting their five-year plan and then the annual action plan, as well as accepting the analysis of impediments to fair housing. Again, the nitty-gritty of affordable housing. So if you're interested, you may want to attend that. They also have their consolidated annual performance report that they do that says how they did on those plans for the previous year. And then they have a staff overview of housing developments and programs. They had done a presentation at the City Council last Tuesday, and so they're going to be also presenting that to this committee.
And the last meeting at 5:30 p.m., the Affirmative Action Commission, but again, no agenda.
Wah, wah. Good ending.
And that's the week ahead in local government. Thank you, Brenda.
Yeah, thank you, Christina.
Find out more about the week ahead at forwardlookout.com. There you can find a roundup of local news articles each day and the link to ask Rebecca and Brenda a question and have them answer it on air. Still no questions?
Still no questions.
You guys need to take advantage of this. For more information, check out the extended version on the WORT website. Brenda and I will be back next week. Keep watching.
Thanks, Christina.
We turn now to two special guests in the studio, Andy Height and Helena White, who want to tell you a little something about the WORT pledge drive.
Yes, we do.
Yes, indeed. And really want to thank our very generous, anonymous local news lover who jumped on the WORT long sleeve t-shirt. Chose the black over the blue royale, and looks like it'll be awesome.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Twice. It isn't a dissolving class structure. It actually is a dancing array of musical notes, but it's a beautiful shirt.
And you can interpret it however you like.
We really want to thank our anonymous local news lover, and we want you to be the next one, 608-256-2001 or online.
And I just want to mention that Anonymous is actually a lapsed donor. She last donated sometime early in the Biden administration, so it's been long enough that we will double her donation, which is really exciting.
We've had a president before this last one?
Yes, we certainly have. I know it seems like it's been going on a long time
it
already.
It sure has. Holy moly. Anyway.
So I want to mention that the long sleeve t-shirt is at the $100 level, but if that's a little bit too pricey for you, you can get a new rain umbrella for $89.90. And that is if you want to donate $7.50 a month, you'll be able to get the Shed Rain Umbrella, and it collapses in an opposite way to how it usually collapses, and it prevents the raindrops from falling right on you when you close the umbrella.
Don't you want raindrops falling on your head?
No, you don't. You
really?
Don't, Andy, no. No.
The song was so...
So you we should get you this umbrella, my friend. We should get you.
I wear a hat because it hits my bald spot and it gets so cold.
So that's another thing that's really good to mention that we want to encourage you to consider donating on a monthly basis.
Oh, yeah, please. The evergreen.
To help Andy out with his bald spot.
So... No. None of your donations will be used to help with my bald spot. I got a hat for that.
A minimum of $5 a month, and it comes out of your checking or savings account, and it's so easy. I do it myself. I donate $40 a month. I've worked up to $40 a month. And fortunately, I can afford that. And maybe you are like, 40, I can't do that. I can do 15 maybe. And that would be fantastic.
Or $10 a month and get the t-shirt or a different premium.
Before you know it.
Talk to Ken and Company about the premiums if you're interested. Really, the best premium is great radio.
Exactly.
Local news, music, culture.
Independent media. 608-256-2001.
Independence ain't dependence.
WORTFM.org. And nobody has pledged online yet.
Nobody's pledged online for this show. We still got an ambitious goal ahead of us. 608.
Yes, we have a big goal.
256-2001. Or stop by the cement pillbox with your safe, your wallet, or your piggy bank. 118 South Bedford Street. Just ring the bell and Ken will let you in.
Because the way it works is we don't break for commercials. We don't have corporate sponsors. We don't have any corporate overlords looking over us and telling us what to play on the radio, what music to play, and what news to cover. We're independent.
We have a few rules that are made by the Federal Communications Commission.
But,
you know,
we are our own editorial board, and we're doing it for you. We are providing the news for you. Nobody's telling us what to do, what to cover, what not to cover. It's for you.
It's powerful.
You listening
out
there.
It's well over $80 every single hour we're on the air. Mm-hmm. Our biggest fee is our transmitter fee. Mm-hmm. But the electricity, the replacing our soundboards.
We need a new roof.
The roof.
And you guys did donate.
Speaking of raindrops falling on our head.
Exactly. You did donate, and we did get new soundboards, so we appreciate that. But now we're on to needing a roof. So 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org. Be the first to pledge online, because we know how much you appreciate this local news.
It's amazing efforts in local journalism to create local news. Four nights a week. On Fridays, we have Union Labor News,
yes,
which is also
which is very good.
Created and driven.
Yeah.
And this kind of element is about the power and the passion of the WRT community, our
volunteers,
listeners, our volunteers, and our underpaid staff.
Yes, yes, and overworked and underpaid. A whole hour of local news is produced by Faye Parks, who's a paid staff member, and an army of volunteers doing the breaking news, the headlines,
the kind of army I'd believe in if there was such a community service corps that is doing the kind of work. So support our work at
608-256-2001. And now we're going to go back
to Wait. Ring that bell. Harry, thank you. We love you.
We're going to go back to local news, and we'll talk about Harry when we get back.
And now back to the news.
Well, speaking of Harry, it's his segment. This is great timing. Mem Fox, Australia's most popular children's book author, is turning 77 this Wednesday. Also a popular author here in the United States, she's perhaps best known for her place in the top 100 censorship list of her book, Guess What? It was banned in 2023 in Duval County, Florida. Feature contributor and recent donor, Harry Richardson, has more.
For Joe Hill and Cesar Chavez, who fought in their own time. For our brothers and our sisters, up and down that picket line. For the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. For the Union men and women, standing up and standing strong.
This Wednesday, March 5th, is the birthday of Australia's most popular children's author, Mem Fox. She's perhaps best known for her book, Guess What?, being banned in Duval County, Florida, in early 2023. The book was among some 565 books banned in Florida schools from 2021 to 2023. A new law, HB 1069, promoted and signed by Governor Ron DeSantis, made it easier to ban books. DeSantis was then running for president. The new law's wording is vague. Any visual representation of a person or portion of the human body which depicts nudity or sexual conduct, sexual excitement, sexual battery, bestiality, or sadomasochistic abuse, and which is harmful to minors. Under the law, anyone can challenge any number of books demanding their removal. Books are withdrawn from the library pending review. The challenged drawing from the book, which tells the story of an elderly woman, shows her in an old laundry trough. It's completely appropriate, says Fox. She's washing herself, sort of sitting in the sink. You can't see her private parts at all. The drawing depicts a fanciful scene with a frog on the sink and fish hanging above the extremely thin figure, wearing a scuba face mask covering most of her head. When Fox heard her book was banned, she howled with laughter. It's pitiful, isn't it? It's like the Americans keep killing each other with guns, and they did do things like this as well, Fox told ABC Radio Adelaide. You just feel sorry for them. You just think, people, you're so unsophisticated, you're so pitiful. Fox said she traveled to the U.S. more than 100 times and said Americans were so kind to me. They were so, so good, so generous, so warm-hearted, so affirming. I just grieve for them, she said. Tragically, book banning has tripled in 2023-24 from the previous school year to over 10,000 books nationwide, says PEN America. PEN is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freedom of expression. Florida and Iowa head the list with approximately 8,000 books. Texas is third. The six major book publishers filed a joint lawsuit challenging book bans. This may end up in the Supreme Court. Book banning is likely to increase under the anti-LGBTQ Trump administration. But those are stories for another day. For the past in the past, I'm Harry Richardson.
Over the next few weeks, Madison Mixology is breaking from its usual formatting to bring you a rundown of some shots you can order at your local bar. This week, feature contributor Charlie Bielowski is joined by fellow bartender Riley Capel to tell you all about the controversial Irish Car Bomb.
So what do you got when it comes to the Irish Car Bomb then?
So the Irish Car Bomb is a cocktail that originated in 1979. And despite its name, it actually originated in America. It originated in Norwich, Connecticut. And the drink's name is actually a reference to the car bombings that occurred in Northern Ireland during the Troubles.
I'm seeing that the name of the guy who created this drink was a guy named Charles Burke Cronin Oat. Yeah. What a name on that guy, huh?
Yeah, that is quite a name, Mr. Oat.
Now, this falls into a category known as bomb shots, and bomb shots are, you know, things like Jaeger bomb, cherry bomb, stuff like that. Irish car bomb, it's not just in its name, it actually is a bomb shot, but it's also a boilermaker shot.
Correct.
And a boilermaker is usually a shot of something poured into either another shot or a glass of beer. So the Irish car bomb is usually made up of three main ingredients. It includes the tub glass that you have usually full of Guinness beer. And then off to the side, you have a half and half mixture in a shot glass of Jameson and Bailey's. So we've got that here today, and I think it's about time that we gave it a try. Are you about ready?
Yeah, let's give it a whirl. Thoughts?
1 second. Ooh, boy. So I had to really chug that thing to get that down. But
yeah, that was impressive.
It's just as I remembered it. And I can't express this enough. That's probably one of my favorite shots that I've had.
Honestly, wasn't as bad as I was expecting it to be.
It goes down very smooth. I had that same issue when I first tried it. I thought, oh my God, this is a huge shot. It's basically a tub full of Guinness. And then included with that, you've got the Baileys and the JMO. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to down all this in one go. But the thing about Guinness is Guinness goes down very smooth. It's not really something you have to worry about drinking either, because it doesn't have that same kind of like bloating effect that lots of other beers do. So you can down Guinness after Guinness after Guinness and not really feel like you're gaining any weight off of that, which is really freaking nice.
It's such a heavy beer, though. It feels like a meal.
It definitely does. It's one of those like darker beers, so it's definitely considered more of like a breakfast beer, I suppose.
Sure. And I've never had an Irish Car Bomb before, and I was pleasantly surprised by it. I'm not a huge fan of beer in general or whiskey, but yeah, like you said, it went down surprisingly smooth.
That was Charlie Bielowski and fellow bartender Riley Capel. They'll taste test some more shots next week. Today, feature contributor Harry Richardson shares his thoughts on a new Netflix documentary, Will and Harper. It follows comedian Will Ferrell as he gets reacquainted with an old friend, comedy writer Harper Steele, who recently came out as a trans woman.
I don't doubt that Will is my friend, but I'm not Andrew Steele anymore. It was just, whoa.
That was a clip from the trailer for the new documentary, Will and Harper, directed by Josh Greenbaum. Comedian, actor Will Ferrell and his good friend, comedy writer Harper Steele, go on a road trip to renew their friendship. Harper had loved road trips, dive bars, and cheap beer as a man, and wanted to see if she still could as a trans woman. As she says in the doc, I love this country so much, I just don't know if it loves me back. Will and Harper had been friends since they started working in the same week on Saturday Night Live in 1995. Will is a comedian, and Harper is one of the show's writers. Our movie opens with Will delighting in finding eggs in his chicken coop and getting an email from his old friend and saying, oh my God. Will immediately contacts Harper to offer support and suggest a road trip. Harper's opening scene explains her decision to write the email to select friends and family coming out as a trans woman. They decide to do a cross-country trip from New York to Los Angeles over 16 days. There are pit stop cameos, to borrow a phrase from the London Independent Reviewer, from Tracy Morgan, Tina Fey, Will Forte, and Molly Shannon. Kristen Wiig appears via phone with a promise to write the pair a theme song. First stop, New York, from Harper's home upstate. She loads up the van, picks up Will near the city, and they go to a Greek diner and meet Harper's two grown children. After hugs, they all sit down to a comfortable conversation where Harper's kids consider him dad, had obviously accepted and supported her change. Soon, Will and Harper are picking up supplies for the road trip, including a gigantic amount of Pringles. Filmmakers swear Pringles and Dunkin' Donuts, who become running gags in the documentary, are not some product placement. There's a 15-person crew at work to put this film together. The most touching parts of the movie are the heartfelt conversations between Harper and Will. I found this to be a deeply moving, humanizing documentary that should point the way to future films to portray the lives of trans people. We need some films with inside looks on trans youth, especially in this time of Trump and his allies' demonization of that now even more vulnerable group. A fine, heartfelt movie. I highly recommend it. For WT's Monday Movie Review, I'm Harry Richardson.
We've come nearly to the end of another hour of handcrafted local news here on WORT. Our guests this evening, Andy Height and Helena White, have one last word for you, and hopefully some people to thank. What's the word, Andy and Helena?
Thank you.
That's the word. That's the watchword. Tell us, who did we hear from?
We heard from Harry.
Nice, Harry. Thank you.
Yeah, Harry gives his all, and he likes public affair, especially Thursday and Friday, the evening news, especially Monday, and Labor Radio. Mm-hmm. Harry's a Labor stalwart.
Yes, he is.
He rejected a ride on an F-35 so he could produce a story for the local news on WORT, or at least that's a rumor I heard. And well, you can help WORT by calling 608-256-2001.
Right. Or go to WORTFM.org and pledge online. Or you can pledge through the app, too. That's another option. And it's amazing the amount of pledging. We've had heard from so many people today. We want to thank all the different people. Jean has donated. Oh, excuse me. Anonymous has donated, and Harry has donated. And we heard from other people for the first hour. And it's not too late for you to give us a call at 608-256-2001 or go to WORTFM.org and pledge for local news. We know that that WORT is a place that gives you information. You get it from Amy Goodman. You get really good local news information from the local news show.
All of our local journalists, the heart and soul they put into this work.
It's fantastic. But then, so that feeds your brain, but we know that the music feeds your soul. And we know you appreciate the news and the music. So give us a call at 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org because you love both music and news.
This station, these shows are a labor of love. They're produced by volunteers. The journalists are volunteers. It might be a path for training, but what it really is that spark that lights the fire of community that brings us out of this American darkness and shines a kind of light mm-hmm. that we need mm-hmm. to feed our heads, feed our hearts, mm-hmm. feed our souls mm-hmm. so that we can trudge further to build a better community, a better world. And none of that stuff is easy. We're here because we love this station. Mm-hmm. We love you. We appreciate the work you do, and coming together, that's what brings us into this great experiment in community radio that's about to have its 50th birthday
right.
this year.
And we know how much you appreciate the fact that we are independent local media. We are not beholden to any corporate sponsors. We have no editorial board that's telling us what to do, what to cover, what to play. We know how much you appreciate that. And I also wanted to say that if you donate on a monthly basis, we can make the pledge drives shorter. The more people who donate on a monthly basis, we can have shorter pledge drives. We've already reduced this pledge drive. Instead of being 14 days, it's only 10. There's another drive we do in the spring that's only 1 week, not two.
And it's because of you, our listener sponsors, who've shifted from calling in, you know, once or twice a year with a yeah. pledge to going to the what they call the evergreen donors.
Right.
$5 a month, $100 mm-hmm. a month. Anything in between that yeah. fits your comfort level and more importantly, your budget.
There's no upper limit, but we can only go as low as $5. And so please consider donating on a monthly basis and we can have shorter pledge drives.
So that's a beautiful thing.
608-256-2001. Talk to the phone answerers or you can go to WORTFM.org. And I believe you can indicate there that you want to donate on a monthly basis online too.
This experiment in community radio has been listener sponsored since 1975. And here we are, 50 yeah. years later.
Yep.
And we have some of our founding members still
yes.
involved. Dave Devereaux Weber was here pledge rapping yeah. on the Jazz Show,
yeah.
Rockin' John every Saturday,
right.
and a few other stalwarts that, well, I'm not mentioning them, it's because of my lacks. But
yeah.
the reality is this station, 89.9, is just such a centerpiece of life in South Central Wisconsin
yeah.
and now around the internets.
Right. Right, all over the world. So give us a call at 608-256-2001 or go to WORTFM.org to pledge online. And thank you.
We love you.
Thanks again for those calls. Keep them coming at 608-256-2001. You can keep those web donations coming too. We don't mind. WORTFM.org/donate. Thank you for supporting WORT Live Local News at 6. Your headline writer this evening was Nate Carlin. Shayna Clark was your reporter, and welcome aboard, Shayna. Special thanks to feature contributors Brenda Conkle, Christina Leffering, Charlie Bielowski, and Harry Richardson. Thanks also to Nicholas Leet for technical production. Engineer Victor Calzoni got the news on the air tonight. Faye Parks produced this newscast, and Shally Pittman is the news director here at WORT. I'm your host, Sam Swartz.
And I'm your host, Rachel Fields. Up next is the most freeform show on your radio dial, The Access Hour. It's coming up after these announcements. Good night.
And you're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Support for this program comes from Greater Madison Music City. Through proven strategies, success stories, and challenges, the Music City Circuit presented by Greater Madison Music City will highlight music tourism's role as a driver of urban transformation, offering valuable insights on how to shape our future as a music city while empowering our local musicians and music-related businesses. The Music City Circuit, coming soon to select streaming platforms. More information at ourgmmc.org.
Welcome to the Access Hour, where each week WORT offers you the opportunity to fly your program over the radio. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors. We'd like this show to be as unpredictable as possible, so we need your creative ideas. It's a fair trade. You give us what you've got, and we give you the facilities and any help you need to get your program airborne. So let your mind wander and wonder. And when the inspiration for some pretty good radio glows with a clear, bright light, get in touch. Just go to WORTFM.org and look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Programs are scheduled first come, first served. And now it's time to begin another foray into the freest form program on the WORT schedule, the Access Hour.
These are the community radio blues.